I'm John Batchelor. This is Friends of History Debating Society. Germanicus, a.k.a. Michael Vlahos of Johns Hopkins, is here because after stating the challenge, the difficulty, the problem, the upset of the retreat from the limits of empire, we are in Londinium observing 2,000 years from now as the Americans and their allies attempt or endeavor to retreat from Kabul, Afghanistan without worse and worse. We observe here in Londinium, in the first century A.D., that there are weak emperors, there are strong emperors, there are emperors who are strong and weak at the same time. We have one now, the semi-divine Domitian, whom we find okay, but we're very far from Rome. He, because we can see into the future, will be assassinated. And it is routine in the first century that our emperors end violently. We don't do succession very well in the first century of the Roman Empire, and maybe the American Empire takes account of the fact that it's not doing succession well as it reaches the limits of empire. So, Germanicus, I turn to you to say that the army, the Roman army, was for conquest. It was a well-oiled machine that moved effectively, 28 legions at the time. We're in Londinium, 90 A.D., eventually it'll expand to maybe 30 legions. And they're recruited variously across the empire from tribes as we grow. However, the army remains a significant factor in the maintaining the garrison of the empire. And the army recovers from bad moments, like as it was ordered, the 9th Legion was ordered to retreat, the 2nd Legion was ordered to retreat from the limits of the Britain province, as it was needed on the Danube and the Rhine. So, in observing this fact that we recover, do we become fatalists in that this emperor will pass? We know that another emperor momentarily will step in, Nerva, and then we'll get Trajan, his legitimacy is always going to be in question, but he's successful, and Trajan followed by Hadrian, who's also successful, and his legitimacy also is a little shaky. But is that balm to those who are worried now about the limits of empire? Is that satisfactory?
The U.S. Has the capacity from a material vantage, you know, looked at from a purely physical perspective, has all the power to mobilize whatever it wants. But given the crisis of the nation today, it is hard to find where the leadership will come from that will allow the U.S. to stage any kind of comeback or imperial revival as things unravel over the next few years. Now, this is just to remind that the U.S., like Rome in the 2nd century and 1st century, is an empire. And empires are polities in which the executive is the holder of primacy and is supported as the primal leader, as it were, by the elites. And no longer is the republic in operation effectively. It is in titular ceremonial terms, but that really counts for very little day to day. So what you have in Rome in the first, second centuries is an executive office that is overall extremely capable and capable, moreover, of good generalship. And emperors who are successful in the first and second centuries are also good military leaders. And some of them are rather remarkable, like Marcus Aurelius, a tremendous military leader and an even more tremendous philosopher. And yet Marcus Aurelius spent much of his reign, 2 decades, up beyond the Danube, in the heart of Bohemia, near in the midst of the Czech Republic, what is the Czech Republic. And he had to spend his entire, the balance of his reign holding back the barbarian tide. Tiberius was an excellent general. You go up and down the line all the way until the death of Marcus Aurelius, and the empire is able to bounce back from disasters. I mean, you have to remember the Marcomanni and the Quadii broke through the Danube and invaded Italy itself during the reign of Marcus Aurelius, and he beat them back. But he had to spend 20 years fighting to do it. What happened in the 3rd century is that the recipe of emperors as generals fell apart. And you had several emperors who were either captured or killed in battle, and the Roman armies themselves collapsed for complex reasons. And, of course, Rome later recovered in the 4th century. But the truth is that the United States does not have a record of leaders who can essentially, if metaphorically, take up the standard of ceremonial generalship and lead America to victory. The recent emperors who did have that capacity were few. You have to go back, I think, to Reagan to find an American emperor who had the capacity to rally the country and the military itself, as would a great general. Of course, he wasn't in the field. But much of American military power and much of its persuasive capability lies in the fact that people believe that the American military machine is, in fact, as powerful and unstoppable as it appears. And therefore, the true exercise of effective American military power for much of the Cold War and for much of the period after the Cold War that we inhabit has been a military exercise as ceremonial presentation. In other words, demonstrations, maybe some perfectly situated and positioned bombing campaigns, maybe a carrier that is able to do certain kinds of interdiction, movements of troops. All of those can convey a successful vision of power. And the really sad commentary is that when we have actually gone to war, we have failed every time. We've failed at war and actual battle for the last 70 years, since the defeat of the last Chinese offensive in Korea in 1951. And yes, you heard it right, Chinese offensive. America has fought China twice in the last 70 years. And that should put everyone, it should give everyone pause. And we haven't fought the Russians. We haven't fought the Iranians, but we have fought the Chinese bitterly. And the fact is that our enemies now know that America's military presentation of unstoppable invincibility is gone.
All right.
In other words,
I want to ask a question though. After Boudicca raided Londinium, we know from the veterans who were living here now and have told stories, and defeated two Roman armies. They were not complete armies. One was elements of a legion. The other one was elements of another legion. Then finally Agricola showed up with the real thing, the main army, and leveled Boudicca and her tribe so they don't really exist anymore. Will we do that in America? Will we want to prove ourselves and find an Agricola to level somebody?
Well, we sort of did that against ISIS. But actually, we didn't, because the hard fighting on the ground was done by Iraqi Shia militias. And in the other battles that we fought in Vietnam, Iraq, Afghanistan, have all been lost campaigns. where, unlike the Romans, we could not conclude with a victorious battle and a parade of prisoners. In fact, the U.S. has failed in its wars because it has misunderstood the power of ceremony. And although we've put enormous effort into effectively being able to kill large numbers of any enemy, if they don't submit, we end up being screwed, as it were, just as we have been in Afghanistan. What that means is that our enemies understand the power of ceremony, where ceremony equates to a great spectacle of victory. And the Taliban have that now, just as the North Vietnamese did when they entered Saigon in 1975. We have never been able to assert a ceremonial through combat since World War II. We didn't succeed even in Korea, although arguably, you know, we pulled out something like a strategic win in Korea. In many ways, it didn't translate into that.
No, and we're still garrisoning Korea. We'll get to those examples. I've read this already, Germanicus. Questions are asked. We've garrisoned Germany since 1945. We've garrisoned Korea since 1951, 52. Why is it that we couldn't garrison Afghanistan? We've lost Central Asia for a generation, maybe for the century. We lost it. And China and Russia will now join hands and dominate the Eurasian prosperity. However, there is this other example of the possibilities that we will have a leader who rises up, and we've talked about this. 1904, Teddy Roosevelt running for his one and only presidential campaign because he inherited the presidency after the death of McKinley and then promised never to run again, though he did, but he promised in 1904. And we all know it as The Wind and the Lion, the wonderful Sean Connery movie about a Berber raider, Razuli, who kidnaps, in the movie, it's an American woman, but in fact it's an American engineer named Petty Karas. And Roosevelt turned it into an incident for his campaign strategy. And the famous line, bring me Petty Karas alive or Razuli dead, as resonated for decades in America. Is it possible, Germanics, that we just have a couple of minutes, is it possible that there is a Roosevelt to issue such a statement in order to recover from this humiliation in Kabul?
It will be years before the U.S. recovers and is able to even consider, such an enterprise. And yet, if the enterprise is to be successful, it must be an inspired bit of national theater. And the president must be understood. He must be seen collectively by the world as being the leader of this great military campaign. And it must achieve its goals through the ceremonial venues that have proven so successful for America, and not the failed actual combat campaigns that have brought us to defeat. And just think, Reagan was really good at this because he knew where to fish and cut bait. So he did Grenada, but Grenada was not really a military campaign. It was a giant exercise in stage management, and it was incredibly successful. And in when he met situations that weren't going to work, like American intervention in Lebanon, after the Marine barracks bombing, he immediately pulled the U.S. out so that it wouldn't be a ceremonial occasion in which America could be seen as being defeated. He just left, and it was, if not forgotten, it was not invested with the kind of terrible significance that you see in Kabul, that you saw in Saigon, and that you saw, frankly, right, in Iraq with the triumph of ISIS.
Walter Russell Mead, in a column in the Wall Street Journal recently, gave us the Winston Churchill quote to Neville Chamberlain. You were given the choice between war and dishonor. You chose dishonor, and you will have war. He uses it to explain the first weekend that we knew that Afghanistan had fallen apart. Michael, recovering from dishonor is not inevitable.
No.
And Rome didn't have that understanding, that virtue of honor that the American Empire has. And I puzzle, just in your last thought, what's a timeline that's reasonable? Our children's generation, is that enough? Another 30 years?
If the U.S. is to recover in a kind of Roman-like manner, it is going to have a great exercise or demonstration that provides that energy and sense of recovery and revival within the next decade. Otherwise, we will end up like the nations that have given up, which include today's Germany, France after 1940, certainly after 1962 in Algeria, and sadly, Japan as well. We will end up like them. We will be incapable of serious resistance to whatever power comes to coerce us.
Michael Vlahos, Johns Hopkins, Germanicus, Londinium. I'm Gaius. I'm John. This is the Friends of History Debating Society, philosophizing